Hello there, and welcome to Heard Online, a series of videos where we examine things we hear online in a critical way and find out what is true and what is not. In this episode, we are going to look at sleep debt, and it's going to be particularly helpful if you've been concerned that you've racked up all this sleep debt and you don't know how to repay it, and what happens if you don't or you can't. We are going to look specifically at an article from the New York Times titled "The Sleep Debt Collector Is Here." Before we do, we have something new here in Heard Online, something we've never done before. We're going to introduce a new concept, which is the triggerometer. The triggerometer is a scale from 0 to 5 in which we assign the value to the headline of an article, where 0 is not alarming at all, very objective, and 5 is extremely alarming. Now, going back to this headline, "The Sleep Debt Collector Is Here," you can think about this for a minute and see what number you would want to give it. I personally gave this headline, the New York Times, a triggerometer reading of 4. I think this was pretty alarmist. You know, this headline, it makes one think of, you know, when we are in financial debt and a debt collector is there to get your money, and that's a very like threatening type of situation where, like, okay, if you don't have enough money, they're gonna take your car, they're gonna take this and that, you know, and so yeah, I think this has a high triggerometer reading. Now, with the triggerometer value assigned, let's jump in here, and we're going to see that it's going to be a pretty interesting ride here. We're going to end up looking at a world record in wakefulness, several of them actually, and we're going to see what the world's, you know, potentially the world's foremost sleep expert of all times, William Dement, considered the father of sleep medicine. By many, thought of the, you know, when the world record was broken in the 60s. Very, very interesting. Anyways, here is the article, "The Sleep Debt Collector Is Here." And it starts off saying, "Recent studies in humans and mice have shown that late nights and early mornings may cause long-lasting damage to your brain." Again, very alarming. And you wonder kind of like, okay, what makes them say this? So then we continue reading. And it starts off by, "The sleep debt collectors are coming." Again, very alarming. "They want you to know that there's no such thing as forgiveness, only a shifting expectation of how, when you're going to pay them back. You think of them as you lie in bed at night. How much will they ask for? Are you solvent? You fall asleep, then wake up in a cold sweat an hour later. You fall asleep, then wake up drifting in and out of consciousness until morning." It's very unclear who the author here is speaking to, you know. If somebody is like sleep deprived, if they are someone who has not, you know, prioritized sleep, then why are they so worried about this? They can just like decide to sleep more. If they're talking to somebody with insomnia, then this is just really cruel, right? So it's unclear who this is meant for, but again, has this very alarmist tone. Let's continue reading. "As most every human has discovered, a couple nights of bad sleep is often followed by grogginess, difficulty concentrating, irritability, mood swing, and sleepiness. Nothing really that strange here. I think most of us, if we, for some reason, like we're parents, let's say our small little kids are keeping us up a lot at night. Yeah, of course we're a little foggy and groggy, and you know, we're not in the same mood as we were if our baby slept through the night, you know, and we actually had a restful night. But at the same token, you know, imagine somebody who is an entrepreneur who's just figured something out and they're barely sleeping because they're so excited. They probably feel pretty happy and excited too. So again, there's no direct correlation between how many hours we sleep and our mood, for example. You know, there's so much else that plays a role, particularly the story of why we slept less, right? Okay. "For years," let's continue reading. "For years, it was thought that these effects accompanied by cognitive impairments like lousy performance and short-term memory tests could be primarily attributed to a chemical called adenosine, a neurotransmitter that inhibits electrical impulses in the brain. Spikes in adenosine has been consistently observed in sleep-deprived rats and humans, and adenosine levels can be quickly righted." So they're making a point there that we used to think that these effects were just like short-term and there was no problem, right? and we could just catch up on sleep, or, and we'll be fine tomorrow, something like that. Now, okay, here comes the new thing. You know, the reason they wrote this article, which is a review article published in the journal Trends in Neuroscience. So they're writing, but a review article published in the Journal of Trends in Neurosciences contends that the folk concept of sleep as something that can be saved up and paid off is bunk. So they're portraying that, okay, there's a new article now that is really challenging our previous notion that, you know, we could just you know, cut down on sleep and then we could make up for it later. They're saying that this is being challenged. So we're going to take a pretty quick look at this article, which is here in the Trends in Neuroscience, Neural Consequences of Chronic Sleep Disruption. Going back to the trigger-o-meter, I'd say this is actually a zero or a one. Like, it's pretty, like, they're just talking about what they're going to examine here. So I think that's a pretty reasonable headline there. Anyways, with that, I'm not going to go in detail at all, but I read this and I realized that there are two things they're talking about in this article. One, they're talking about studies where you've taken like a bunch of people and, you know, half of them are sleep deprived and half of them are not. And then you ask the two groups how they feel. And oftentimes those people who are in the sleep deprived group, they will say like, oh, I felt a little more tired. You know, I wasn't kind of in the same mood and things of that nature, which again is not, I think is entirely expected. And my point here is that there's no new studies in humans that show any causal link between sleep, sleep deprivation and any health issues, right? But they claim to have found these in mice. And what have they done to these mice? Well, they've done a bunch of experiments where they use, you know, one of these models, like models for sleep deprivation. So they use gentle handling or an orbital shaker, rotating drum, or multiple platform over water. These various things to just keep a mouse awake for as long as the experiment wanted. And we see this, to me, honestly, the first thing I think is like, why are we doing these to these little mice, right? Why are we doing this? You know, yes, I believe that there's nothing, we haven't shown that short sleep or something causes any like health problems, but it's unpleasant. It's unpleasant for everyone. It's unpleasant for these mice. And what are you really trying to show here? That, okay, if you can show that there's some health problems in mice, does that translate to humans? Even if that was the case of what we're going to do, like just tell people to sleep more, which you're already doing, right? So anyway, first thing I thought when I saw this was like, what are we doing to these little mice, honestly, right? Anyways, so using these experiments though, many various sleep experts, authors, scientists have shown that there are some problems in the locus coeruleus or like in some other cell types, you know, in the hippocampal responses. They're basically saying that, okay, we can show that in mice, sleep deprivation seems to cause some type of cell damage, right? That's kind of what they're saying. And then, you know, if you link that to how humans feel after we're sleep deprived, then they say that, okay, we can postulate that this maybe happens in humans too. And if this happens over a long period of time, then maybe this could cause like, you know, health issues. This is basically this is what they're saying in this article. So there's nothing new. There's nothing new here. And there's still no evidence that sleep deprivation or sleep debt, as they like to call it, causes any health problems in humans. Their concluding remarks, in fact, say that there is sufficient evidence that chronic sleep loss can exacerbate amyloid tau and asynclein neurodegenerative process in animal models. It remains to be examined, however, whether these links translate to humans. Again, nothing new. It remains to be examined. Nobody knows. So, you know, having read the original article here and going back to this one, I want to say that there's nothing there. There's nothing new here. There's no evidence whatsoever of any problems, right? So that was the first thing. But it gets more interesting, actually, as we continue to read. We can say that we see like that the one of the persons who contributed to the review that we just read says this is really, really important, setting the stage for what needs to be done in sleep health and sleep science, said Mary Ellen Wells, a sleep scientist at the University of North Carolina, which this is one of the points I always try to make, that if you look at a sleep scientist and all the sleep scientists who's done all these experiments in mice, Like, what do we expect them to find, and what do we expect to be actually published? If somebody did some experiment in mice and saw that, oh, there was nothing there, we didn't find anything, that wouldn't be published. If you don't get published as a scientist, you don't get funding, you don't get promoted, it's not helpful to you, right? And so I think it's really helpful to keep that in mind when you think about, like, you know, these type of studies, right? So now this is where it gets, I think, really, really interesting. So the two next paragraphs, let's read them together. It has long been known that intense periods of sleep deprivation are bad for your health. Well, again, I contest that, but anyway, they say that. Forced insomnia was used for centuries as punishment and torture. I'm sure that's very unpleasant. In the first experimental study of sleep deprivation published in 1894 by Russian scientist Maria Manasena, puppies were forced to stay awake throughout constant stimulation. They died within 5 days. Examining their bodies afterward, Manasena observed that the brain was the site of predilection of the most severe and most irreparable changes. Blood vessels had hemorrhage and fatty membranes had degenerated. The total absence of sleep is more fatal for the animals than the total absence of food, she concluded in 1894. This is really alarming, right? If you know, she's saying that it's more important to sleep than food. Wow, that's a bold statement. And what she described in these puppies, like, really, 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 really is alarming. But, you know, there seems to be things actually in the very article we looked at that sort of contradicts this. And it is on page 2, where something similar had been done in mice. Let's take a look at that. A series of experiments performed over 3 decades ago, which aimed to assess potential brain cell damage in rats following sleep deprivation using methodologies available at the time. Adult rats were exposed to extreme forms of sleep deprivation, total sleep deprivation of 2 to 3 weeks. The sleep deprivation resulted in profound systemic changes. Yet, examination of the brains immediately after sleep loss for general histology, apoptosis, and necrosis yielded no significant brain abnormalities. I thought that was super interesting. So in these dogs, she saw this huge impact, like, you know, that they could see even with whatever methods were available in 1894. But 3 decades ago, she's in more modern times, they saw nothing in mice. That's pretty interesting. And it gets even more interesting because the next paragraph says, but there are many ways to not get enough sleep. You can go entirely without sleep for an extended period of time, what scientists call acute sleep deprivation. In 1963, a high school student managed to stay awake for 264 hours. And you can see that this is blue here. So I actually clicked this link because it was so striking that, okay, first you say that in puppies not sleeping for 5 days, you know, that they all died, okay? But then you say that there's this person who stayed awake for actually 11 days, and apparently they're fine. They didn't say anything about sleep problems there. So what happens if you click this link? Well, if you click that link, you end up here. And this is an interview with Randy Gardner, who actually, he's quite famous. So he has his own Wikipedia page because he broke the record of staying awake back in the 60s, and he was awake for 11 days. Now, in this article, they say he broke the record, but the teenage stunt has come back to haunt him. Sounds kind of alarming there, right? At 71, he offers wisdom about staying up past your bedtime. So what was going on, all right? So let's read the transcript from this article. So Gardner says he was kind of a science nerd when he was young, and he came to San Diego. It was a big city, and I believe that's where they had this kind of, they didn't call it marathon, but it was some kind of competition to see who could stay up the longest. All right, so he says, how did it go? Well, the two first days were easy, and he noticed in the morning that he was really nauseous, though, and he stumbled on eating citrus for some reason. Tangerines seemed to be fine. And they're asking how he felt. He said it was crazy, where you couldn't remember things. It was almost like an early Alzheimer's thing brought on by lack of sleep. I wonder if that is somebody like put that kind of in his mouth or like made him think about that. But anyways, not strange that we feel a little foggy and difficulty focusing, right? That's what he's saying. A few days into the walkathon, a sleep researcher from Stanford University showed up, William Dement. Gardner says he rented a car, a convertible. We drove around in that, so we had a really good time. After a couple of days of not sleeping around, he had a good time with Dr. Dement. And he said, this really helped me because this was fresh. I guess that helped him stay awake even longer. So this Like the sleep researcher is helping him stay awake even longer, right? And then, and here's what interesting said, he had gone 11 days without drifting off and he had broken the record and he was whisked off to a hospital where the researchers attached electrodes to his head to monitor his brain waves for research purposes and he went to sleep. How long did you sleep? I slept just over 14 hours. I remember when I woke up, I was groggy, but not any groggier than a normal person. He slept 14 hours, woke up, felt a little groggy, but otherwise he was fine. Okay. And then the question becomes, and did you find that over the next several days or weeks you needed extra sleep? Not at all. Not at all. I went right back to regular mode. Everything was fine. Strange, isn't it? This guy had broken the record. And after a day of sleeping, like one night of like catch-up sleep, he was fine. Everything was fine. And so what was this like, you know, the price he had to pay? What was this thing that happened? Well, much, much later in his life, when was this? I think he was in his 50s. He seemed to have had insomnia. And for, 10 years ago, I stopped sleeping. I couldn't sleep. And after that, I think he somehow got uneasy. He's made an uneasy peace with sleep. He regained the ability to drift off, but only for about 6 hours a night. Like, sounds like he has a little bit like, you know, residual fear of that insomnia and whatnot. But again, what I wondered here was like, okay, so he was 71 years old at this time, a couple of years ago. How is he doing now? Then I headed over to his Wikipedia page and he's 2046. So he's around 75, 76 years old. And there's nothing about here about like, you know, having had any type of like sequelae after that. In fact, here under this sequence, subsequent record information, they report that actually some say that a Finnish person broke his record shortly after staying awake for 11 and a half days. There's a Guinness record saying that somebody was awake for 449 hours. In 1977, a rock chair marathon produced that result. Tony Wright in 2007 was said to have exceeded Randy's record at all. There's an Australian project to state that somebody was awake for 18 hours. So there's a lot or several people who have been awake for many, many days, at least so they report. And in none of these is there any, report of any like harmful effects to them or anything like that. So I thought that was a really interesting little side trip. Okay, so having taken that kind of side trip now, we can go back to this article and I think there's not too much more to add, except I want to say actually that they sought out some comment from a Dr. Siegler or something like that. Where was that? Who actually I thought said something very, very, very reasonable. Okay, Jeremy Siegler said, it is possible that sleep deprivation damages rat and mouse brains, but that doesn't mean that you should get stressed about not getting enough sleep, said Jerome Siegel, a sleep scientist at the University of California, which very much echoes my thoughts on this. So what are our concluding remarks here? Well, I put down three things as concluding remarks. One is this one. You know, this is the article we saw here is from the New York Times. It's not from Healthline or, you know, some maybe less established or venerated, media outlet. Like New York Times is like a bastion of like, in my mind, at least, it's like a place where you look for some, you know, quality, like real quality research journalism and reporting, right? This is from the New York Times. And when I read this, I'm wondering, like, is the New York Times becoming like this, or are they going down this almost inevitable path of like clickbait and alarmist headlines to stay relevant, to get attention, right? There's so many ways for us to learn, particularly like a lot of us get information from social media, even if it is articles from New York Times, we learn of them from Facebook and Instagram and whatnot. And so is it so difficult nowadays for an outlet like the New York Times to stay relevant that they have to go down this path of like alarmist headlines and clickbait? Is this kind of just a sign of the times? I don't know. But that's something I wanted to remark on and talk about a little bit here. Number two, of course, there continues to be zero evidence that little sleep causes any health issues in humans. I've said it before. I'll say it again here. There's nothing there that I've found no evidence for that. And another interesting thing was sleep research. Like when Bill Dement did his research, and by the way, he's like, described sleep stages, so the AHI, like how we tell if somebody's obstructive sleep apnea or not. He was describing that. He's done a huge amount of work in this field. But, you know, he said, oh, I forgot to show that in the Wikipedia page, you can see that he apparently, like on day 10 or something like that, of Ray Gardner's thing, staying awake, Ray Gardner actually beat William Dement in pinball, and William Dement concluded that, you know, we can go a long time without sleeping and do just fine, like cognitively, was kind of his conclusion there. And so that's very, very, very different from what you hear from most sleep researchers nowadays, right? It seems like maybe there was an era where you could, there wasn't this pressure on sleep researchers to find evidence that, oh, this is really harmful, this is dangerous, like, you know, maybe things were more open in the past. You could just like freely pursue research without having to worry so much about like having to find something alarming so you can get funding and get published and etc. So just a little concluding remark there. So anyways, this is it for today's Heard Online. I hope it brought value to you, and as always, please share your thoughts, comments in the comment section. And also, if you found that you've been quite scared on this journey, you've been quite confused, and you're finding everything you need here to arrive where you want to be, that is wonderful. That's fantastic. Let us know. But if you'd like a little bit more support and guidance on your path to leaving any struggle with sleep, then please head over to our website, check out our coaching options, and we look forward to seeing you on the inside if you decide to join. With that said, I look forward to having everyone back tomorrow. We'll be having our Insomnia Open class tomorrow, live Q&A here. Thursday, we have a guest. We actually have Sean Kasem coming back. Super excited about that. And Friday, of course, we have our roundup and much more to come. Anyways, super glad having you here today. And let's wrap up here. Bye-bye now.